You've been listening to our podcast, Getting Educated, Regulating Your Emotional Reactions, and it's been really helpful. Yet you know you could do better, be better, and you're wanting and needing more support. That's where our coaching service is a game changer. We're here for you when you need us the most, ensuring you have all the tools and resources at your fingertips, guiding and supporting you to be more effective. Our free rapid relief call helps you gain a broader perspective, commit to your best next steps, and determine what coaching support is right for you. Visit rapidreliefcall.com to book your call today. Welcome to the Journey Beyond Divorce podcast, where we invite you into a journey of healing and personal transformation that will radically change your divorce experience, heal your heart while refining your character, and set you up to be effective and feel empowered as you navigate the practical and emotional challenges of divorce. I'm your host, Karen McMahon, founder of Journey Beyond Divorce. My divorce brought me to my knees, and it also transformed me and set me on this path to help you.
The issue when you're getting divorced is that if you have kids, you can't keep this person completely out because you have children. The boundary is meant to keep them in your circle, but in a way that is safe for you. You decide what your boundaries are and you just stick to them everywhere, and they're the same everywhere. And that's it. And if people are nice, great. And if they're not nice, that's fine. But you don't move because your boundaries are not dependent on how other people act or treat you. When we collapse a boundary and we think we're being nice, you actually get mean because you get resentful, you get frustrated, you get annoyed, you get impatient. And there's nothing loving about that. Remember how you feel when you collapse a boundary, when you get too thin, you don't feel loving.
And then you step into that victim role as if you're the victim of the collapsed boundary. Yep. When you're actually
the one who did it.
Stepping into the realm of high conflict divorce can be daunting after years in a dysfunctional marriage that's left you feeling diminished and uncertain. In our High Conflict Divorce Demystified series, we acknowledge the emotional roller coaster you're on, facing self-doubt and fear, especially regarding your children and finances. We're here to provide empathy, education, and guidance as you navigate the maze of legal intricacies and emotional challenges ahead. So let's dive in. Back to another episode of High Conflict Divorce Demystified. Today, we're discussing holding the line, boundaries in high conflict divorce with Abby Metcalf. Navigating a high conflict divorce requires more than just legal representation. It demands your personal resilience and clear boundaries. As you go through this challenging time, establishing well-defined boundaries is essential. And that's what we're going to dig into today. These boundaries are going to help you manage interactions with your ex, especially in situations fraught with emotional challenges and conflict. Setting effective boundaries is crucial, especially for maintaining your sanity and emotional well-being. Clearly delineating what behaviors are acceptable and what are not, which may not be part of what you did during your marriage. In scenarios when you're faced with explosive conversations, hostile emails, or inappropriate discussions in front of the children, boundaries become your safeguard. This allows you to preemptively set limits on communication styles and topics, ensuring that your interactions remain respectful and constructive. By defining clear consequences for boundary violations, you create an environment where toxic behaviors are less likely to escalate, protecting not only your emotional health, but also the well-being of your children. The trick is, what's the consequence and how do you uphold that boundary, which is what we're going to dive into. So let me just tell you about my guest, my new friend, Abby Metcalf. She is a psychologist, author, podcast host, and TEDx speaker with a profound understanding of relationship dynamics, emphasizes the power of boundaries in her book, Boundaries Made Easy, which is now my favorite boundary book. With over three decades of experience and a doctorate in psychology, Abby provides insightful, practical advice that can transform challenging relationships, yes, the one that you're in, into opportunities for growth and cooperation. Abby has a very impressive resume. She's been a featured expert on CBS and ABC News and has been a contributor to the New York Times, Women's Health, Psychology Today, Well and Good, and Bustle. And of course, she's the host of top-rated, and please put it on your list, Relationships Made Easy podcast that's now in over 170 countries. Holy cow, you are something, girlfriend.
Always sounds like my mother wrote that. I'm like, wow, I sound pretty good there.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
So welcome. And thank you so much for joining me. I'm so excited to talk about your book.
I am excited too. And my goal is always that everyone at the end feels like they have at least one actionable tool they can walk away with, something they can go, yes, I can do that.
Absolutely. And here we're talking to people who have made their way or are trying to make their way into leaving a high conflict marriage. And having had one myself, one thing that seems to be true for most of my clients and myself is that both parties enter the relationship pretty boundary oblivious and not even understanding like what is a boundary. It's kind of like I was raised in a household where we didn't speak Chinese and I don't understand how to say it or what it means. Mm-hmm. And so I'd love to start like just with the basics. How would you define mm-hmm. what a boundary is and why it's valuable to have them in relationships?
Yeah. Well, I will say that word gets thrown around a lot now. You know, my boundary was trampled when most people, it wasn't a boundary. Like, so they're saying it was trampled, but they didn't actually have a boundary. So a boundary at its base is that is when you're doing it, it means that you do not take any responsibility for, in this case, your partner's thoughts, feelings, or actions, and that you take full 100% responsibility for your own thoughts, feelings, and actions. So what's at the base of a boundary is not that another person has to do something. What's at the base of a boundary is that you are responsible for holding it. It is very nice when people respect our boundaries. It is lovely when they do it with very little prompting, but to expect that is crazy, especially in a high conflict relationship. And so you have to back that up. And what I find is that most people will state feelings or things that they would like. You know, I want you to start, you need to start putting away the dishes every night before we go to bed. Or I didn't like when you said that. Don't talk to me that way. Those are great things to say. They are not boundaries. A boundary is when you state something, and we'll talk about the different pieces, but really a boundary has at its core, your core value that I call them your like deal breaker, the thing you have to see. And boundaries show up in different ways. That core value shows up in different ways. But when you have a boundary, it's really what your standard is for something. And then what you will do when that standard isn't met. Without the what you will do, what I call like the teeth, I don't like to say consequence because it's not like we're going to punish people. Yeah. This isn't about punishing someone. This is about having self-worth and self-respect and our own feeling of agency in the world. That's what it's about. Yeah. So it's a response that you will have when, not if, when someone cannot meet you where you're asking to be met. Then you will have this response. So it's not a punishment. It's not a consequence. It is a response you're having. But I do call it like the teeth, because without that, people are not motivated in any way because it's something you want. It's not something I want. So, you know, why do I care? Like what you want. And again, if you're in a loving, deep, connected relationship, people care. If you're in a high conflict situation, no matter what it is, that you don't have that. So you have to have the other side.
Absolutely. And my children are older now, but that season of teenage years, like they they're not high conflict. They just don't care.
No, you know, they don't care.
And so parents have so much difficulty setting boundaries with teenagers and emerging adults because they don't care either. And
No,
it's
they
like,
don't.
well, I've got nothing. If they don't listen to me and abide by me, then I've got nothing. And I'm hearing that you're holding, the holding of the boundary is me honoring my boundaries and my values. I hold it up. I'm responsible. It all happens on my side of the street.
Yes, it does. And this is the hardest thing people have with. I always say boundaries are love. Boundaries are really meant to keep in the people you want to keep in. And yes, keep out the people you need to keep, quote unquote, out. But the issue when you're getting divorced is that if you have kids, is that you can't keep this person completely out because you have children. So you have to think of it that way. The boundary is meant to keep them in your circle, but in a way that is safe for everybody, for you. And that's how I want you to think about it. Otherwise, that's the difference between a wall and a boundary. Walls are meant to keep people out. Boundaries are meant to keep people in. You have
Exactly.
to think
More
of it.
like a garden gate than
There you go.
a steel door.
There you go.
So let's talk about that first piece. So there's two things you said. You're the first person who talked about that full personal responsibility that I've spoken to about boundaries. So I love that because that's always where I start too. It's like how you think, how you feel, nobody makes you, right? And
Nope.
especially in my world of high conflict, most of my clients, they were traumatized in their childhood. And so their parents made them feel, and then they grew up with these patterns. And so everyone's making them feel and making them do and making them think as if they're puppets. And the truth, which is so beautiful about this work, is the minute you get into a boundary book like yours, there's this, ah, oh, wait a second. I have agency over myself. So I love that you started with that. And then the next piece is just saying something isn't a boundary. So let's talk about what is the anatomy of a boundary?
So the anatomy has what I, and we're going to have something free for everyone listening, which is from my book, but you're going to get it for free, which is the, I have a three-step process for creating a boundary. So we'll be talking about it, but you'll be able to download it from you.
And for
You
those watching, I'm just going to show you. For those listening, you don't see this, but I'm holding up the book.
The book is, yeah. And the book is called Boundaries Made Easy, Your Roadmap to Connection, Ease, and Joy. And that's really what it is. It's a roadmap to get there. Because isn't that what we're all looking for? We're looking for connection. We're looking for ease, have that exhale, and we're looking for some joy. And believe it or not, it's out there. And boundaries, that's the only thing between you and that. So that feeling, because it's not your ex or your partner that's going to give you that feeling. It's you. And it's you holding your boundaries that gives you that feeling.
And I'm jumping a little bit ahead, but that statement you just said, like people constantly are like, oh my God, I've got to co-parent with this person. I'm going to be miserable for the rest of my life. And it's like, well, you can choose that path. That path is open to you. But it's boundaries are the key to unlocking the peace and ease, even amidst being in a co-parenting relationship with a hard person. Okay. Anatomy of a boundary.
And I take you through this three-step process, but it's basically identifying what I call your deal breaker, the thing that you have to have. And no matter what else. And so what happens is someone will say, well, I need to be appreciated. That's a common deal breaker. And usually, by the way, you know what your deal breaker is pretty much when you know what you've been arguing about for the last 10 years or 5 years or 2 years with this person. It's really because this piece wasn't there. No matter what you did, no matter what you tried, no matter how you went around it, you were missing this feeling of respect. Or for me, it's like someone having my back. I always want to feel that someone is giving me the most generous interpretation of what's happening because I always mean well. So I need you to have that. I need when you're coming with at me, there needs to be that feeling that you love me first and you respect me first, and then you can have an issue or whatever else might be on the other side. So I help you do this though in this worksheet. You'll get help. What are your deal breakers? What is that? Then you decide what are my standards from that deal breaker. Now, here's the mistake people make. They think of things they would like as opposed to what they need. And what happens in any relationship is we fight with our partners about the things we end up fighting. We're not getting what we need, and we end up fighting about what we'd like. So you fight about the dishes not being put away at night, them not pitching in to cook dinner, or them not picking up Johnny from basketball practice, or that we focus on these things we'd like to see, them not putting the toilet seat in the right place or whatever. These are things you would like. They're not what you need. Because I will tell you this right now, and I'll just say it like for myself, right? If my man has my back and is treating me with respect all the time, I could care less where the toilet seat is. Because I don't feel disrespected by the toilet seat. Right. Because that's not what makes me feel respected or disrespected. It's something else. So when so when people make boundaries, this is what they confuse. And so I'll hear people like they have 1,000 boundaries. Well, my boundaries that the counters are wiped clean. That's not a boundary. That's like a thing you'd like. That's not a boundary.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying? So when we get to what's really under, that's when you really understand again. And again, I help you through the works. If it was this easy, everybody be doing them all the time. But, you know, and then we identify the standard being treated with respect or with this idea. Let's even say this idea that I have that. So I have a boundary with my hubby, Gary, that even when he's mad, like he has to come at me with understanding that I'm always on his team. And so even if it seems like I wasn't, if I said something that he was construing another way, that has to be there in how he's talking to me. Do you hear that? Like hear that?
I actually have a friend coach who says, always assume best intention.
Yeah. There you go. Right. That's all I need. I call it the most generous interpretation of what I've done.
Love that.
So that's it. So when that's not there, when he's right, if he comes at me in a different way and that thing isn't there, what is my response going to be?
Okay. Right?
So for me, it's that, let's say in this situation, that I stop the conversation right away and say, hey, I am definitely open to whatever you need to talk to me about. And right now it's not feeling good. I'd like you to say that. So I'll say something like, can you say that to me a different way? Assuming that I love you and that was not my intent. You're still allowed to be upset about it. Just because I love you doesn't mean I didn't screw up, right? But there's a different coming at you when you do that, right? Or if my kids are mad, I do the same, you know, my teenagers, if they're upset with me or something, it's the same response is, wait, the way you're talking to me is not the way we talk in this house. So take a breath, take a moment. I'm not happy to hear what you have to say, but I'm willing to hear what you have to say. And I need you to come in. Right there, we interrupt that behavior. But if they kept talking to me that way, what would I do? So the boundary is, yes, I say something first. That's my first line. And that's, I think, most people's line is to say something. What happens for most people, though, is that, well, I said something and then he did it anyway.
And so that's it. There's nothing I can do. And then these boundary things don't work.
These boundaries don't work. Exactly. But that's not a boundary. You have to have something with that. And then I leave the room. And then I hang up the phone and then I will start blocking your number and you can only email me. One of the things I do I have a lot of couples I work with. So a lot of high conflict or individuals who are in a high conflict. And I love setting up things like my family wizard for family. I'm like, guess what you need? I will tell you the most brilliant. I had a client I was working with and she ended up having a best friend who happened to be a lawyer. She just lucked out, but not a divorce lawyer, but happened to be a lawyer, checked the emails from her ex. So she wasn't getting any of the emails with all the vitriol and all the yelling because he was a real true narcissist and pretty crazy, frankly. And the friend would just tell her, oh yeah, there's this thing that's coming up in a court date or there's whatever. Like she would just tell her what she needed to hear. She was getting zero of these mail, not getting upset, not getting anxious, not getting pulled in to the rhetoric, right?
Yep.
And never told him because you can't tell the person that they're not getting to you because that's their whole goal. So if they feel like they're getting to you, they won't look for another option. If you tell the narcissist or this person or whatever, this person who's so focused on your misery. Right. If you tell them, oh, I have a friend looking at the email, so I don't even read those, which is what we want to do because we want to take our power back. Do not do that, because then they're not going to use that anymore. They're going to find another way to torture you. So let them think they have their way of torturing you. Great. Yeah. Email away. Do whatever you got to do. But these are the kinds of things. So here's a boundary that my client set up that wasn't, but the boundary was that he could only email, right? But then he was abusing the emails. She was getting like 16 a day, 20 a day, right? So she was like, great, now I got this. So then I said to her, well, what can you do about that? Like, let's talk about it. And she came up with this idea, not me. I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah.
And she said, oh my God, I have a best friend who would actually enjoy this because of who she is as a human.
It's a win-win situation.
So, but do you see where that went? So she kept her boundary, email only. She then put in another layer for herself because he was abusing it.
Right.
And by the way, she's still doing this. It's about 4 years later.
Yeah.
Still has this system set up. And you know what's really great is he has stopped emailing so much at all.
And can we talk about why? I mean, I think that the beauty is when you stop pouring gasoline on the fire, when you stop letting them see that they're controlling you and they're upsetting you and they're stressing you out, when instead it's like, yeah, whatever. It's no more fun for the high conflict person. No. They're like, I need engagement. I need conflict. I need chaos.
Yep.
And what do they call it? Gray rock?
Yep. Yep.
I got nothing. Right. I got nothing.
I got nothing. You know? Yep.
It's okay.
So that's a true boundary where there's a response, like for the original stuff, because he was texting. So she blocked him on the phone and then he went to eat, right? And she blocked him on social media. She did all this stuff, but he needed a way to get to her. And this was the way. And this worked out perfectly with another layer.
And every single person listening is nodding their head right now. And so what I'm hearing is the anatomy of a boundary, and then we'll go into a whole lot more depth, is that knowing what your deal breakers are, deciding what your standard is, your need, not want, your need, the minute the broken boundary begins, you have to stop and you have to state, ask for what you want articulately with the follow through, or maybe not if it's not going to work. And then when they continue to have that behavior, you change, not them, not them. Telling them over and over and louder and louder and in different words and in different ways is actually fueling their fire.
Never
getting really quiet, right? Getting really quiet, saying it once, and then it's like, okay, I got you.
Yep. I say it all the time. Never repeat a boundary. That's number one. Never repeat it. You shouldn't be repeating a boundary, because if you made a boundary and held it, because that's your job, you shouldn't have to repeat it.
Right.
So that's there.
There's no reason to repeat.
So that's on you. Number two, do you want to be correct or effective?
Right.
You could be correct all day. He should know. And you're not getting to me. And I have a friend reading these. And because you want to be so righteously right. And do you, but I always say, do you want to be correct or effective? And effective is that you are in peace. You have agency and you feel okay. You can sleep at night. That's effective. Not that he knows how wrong or she knows how wrong they are.
You've set and upheld your standards. I mean, what better place is
now
there?
Now we're done.
And in 12-step programs, they say it once and you're communicating information. Say it more than once and you're trying to control.
Yes.
Get off of
it. And I know, because I'm in the 12 steps. Yes. I'm in recovery. So
get off that control thing and just keep your side of the street clean. I love the 12
steps. That's all you got to do. And let me just say one more piece with this, is where people get into trouble, is that your boundary, and this is so big for folks, should never change because of how someone else is acting. And let me explain. And this is where people get into trouble.
You've heard the saying, April showers bring May flowers. If co-parenting has been difficult this year due to your ex's alcohol abuse, you need SoberLink. How it works is simple. Your co-parent will test at scheduled times. Built-in facial recognition will confirm their identity. Tampa sensors will flag any attempts to cheat. And results will get sent instantly to your phone, so you know that your kids are with a sober parent. Lay the groundwork for brighter days ahead. Visit soberlink.com/JBD to learn more and get $50 off your device.
You have a boundary with your mother for whatever. And then let's say your ex, sorry, we're talking about exes or your partner. And then let's say he gets really nice and starts being really nice to you. Like he's lulling you in here somewhere. And you think, oh, he's being nice. It's so nice not to be in conflict right now. I'm going to relax this boundary. That's what people do. So based on how he's acting, I'm going to relax the boundary. Yeah. Then of course, as we know, he's going to step right over it again, right? And then what people do is they, and I call that the boundary got too thin. That's how I talk about it in the book. The boundary gets too thin and you relax it and you get very nice because we think that no boundaries are nice for some reason and they're not. But then we get angry and furious and we slam the door and create a very thick boundary, right? Too thick, where we block them everywhere and we're screaming and yelling and we call our lawyers and we take them to court and it's like, whoa, 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 whoa. If you had just kept your boundary where it was, right? So if they're being mean, don't get a stricter boundary. Whatever your boundary is your boundary. If they're being nice, don't relax. Your boundary, and this is with every relationship in your life, your children, I don't care who it is, do not, you decide what your boundaries are and you just stick to them everywhere and they're the same everywhere. And that's it. And if people are nice, great. And if they're not nice, that's fine. But you don't move because your boundaries are not dependent on how other people act or treat you.
You know, I really want to take this message, which was so spot on, and talk to those of you who are crafting co-parenting plans. And especially if you're in high conflict, your co-parenting plan is more of a parallel parenting plan. And we're advised, like, the more detail, the more teeth, the better. And what you just said, Abby, happens over and over and over again, because you're off the battlefield and maybe they are relaxing. Maybe he or she has a new person there.
A new person. Usually, right? That's like, that what
was
it
always,
changes.
I was always like, yep. Yes, he's got yep. somebody that's great. Thank God. I'm on the hook for yeah. a while. But the truth is, most of the time, these high conflict individuals, they don't change. They may present differently for a while because they're distracted by love bombing yes. someone else or what have you.
Yes.
But when you bring those boundaries down, that's exactly what happens. Now you've got a legal document that you're the one who walked away from.
Right. And, exactly.
And it creates so much. It creates the chaos that you actually are working so hard and spending so much money to leave and be behind you. Yep. So I yep. love that. That's such an important rule, that whatever your boundaries are, know them, stick to them. And I like what you said. Boundaries are not mean.
No.
Boundaries are no. simply a way of protecting. When my son was a little boy, he had no personal space. Like, he would run right up to his friends, practically nose to nose. And he had to be taught that people like to have a little bit of space. They right. don't be breathing on their face.
Yeah.
And right. that's why the little boy is getting upset with you. And it's the same thing. We're just creating boundaries that give yeah. us the amount of space that allows us to exist comfortably in the world.
Yes. Yes. And it's really, when you think about it, it's so funny. I used to collapse my boundaries with my mom, but then I would go like talk crap about her to my sister and be all resentful and angry. So right there, am I being nice?
Yeah.
Is that kind? Is that loving? Of course not. And that's what happens when we collapse a boundary and we think we're being nice. You actually get mean because you get resentful, you get frustrated, you get annoyed, you get impatient, and there's nothing loving about that. So if you can just even remember how you feel when you collapse a boundary, when you get too thin, you don't feel loving.
And then you
it's not a nice act.
And then you step into that victim role as if
yeah.
you're the victim of the collapsed boundary yep. when you're actually
the one who did it.
The one who did it.
You know, sorry, not sorry, right? You have to take 100% responsibility. And I would say, again, in these kinds of high conflict, anything, and just parenting in and of itself, just real, and keeping them with your kids. Again, not, because what I find also is that dad's house is so easy, maybe none of the rules are followed, bedtime, sugar, whatever, that, and again, any dads listening, I apologize. It goes the other way too. Sometimes it's the moms,
ways.
But
we
but
have plenty of dads listening.
I'm using this stereotype. So I apologize to any of the dads out there who are the ones holding the boundaries, but, and then mom will get too strict on the other side thinking, mm-hmm. well, I have to make up for what's happening over there. No, you don't. Again, your boundary doesn't change dependent on what other people are doing.
I would like you to talk about how parents interact with their children who are enjoying the other parent. There's this sense that I'm setting a boundary, but I'm actually trying to control my child and their
interaction with the my
right. Yeah, like I think that people, I had someone in one of my courses say, he keeps breaking my boundary. I just want him to. And I was like, no, that's not a boundary.
No.
Like wanting him to do something or her to do something.
Right.
That's not the boundary. What do you need? Right, right. So when it comes to, and it gets complicated, right? The ex has been terrible and you've been frozen out of money and they're speaking shit to the kids about you. And now you want to tell the kids what boundaries they should have.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's so much here. Yeah. It depends. Some things depend on how old children are, right? So we expect them to hold, and I have an ex-husband, I'm on my second. So I thank God was not part of a high conflict, but even without that, let me just say this, married people, this is probably the number one thing they come to me with. Mm-hmm. Dad acts different with the kids than mom does, all over the place. Like it's the number one thing, probably if they have kids
you're raised in different households with different upbringings, different values and the whole bit.
So this is true everywhere.
The world, and it's like,
yes,
I don't agree with you.
Right. So what I always say is, other than obviously a really dangerous environment for your children, which is more rare, but it happens, but this really is more rare. I know you might think it's dangerous that they're not learning their alphabet or something, but it's not, it's okay. It's really understanding that it's actually great for kids to have two different things that they have to deal with. It's great for kids. That's how life works. Well, life doesn't open the little red carpet and go, here you go. Everything's perfect in the way that you like it. I feel like whatever this is, it can be for your kids' greater good in a way. I know not every piece of it, but a lot of it, if you allow it. And so, yes, you have your rules at your house that are just your rules. And the kids might say, well, at dad's, I do this, or at mom's, I do this. Of course they're going to, because they want the other thing. And your only answer to that is, okay. There's no argument. There's nothing else. Yeah, sure.
And I would even suggest that when you do that, and then they run into a boundary issue with mommy or daddy, mm-hmm. and you're a safe person because you haven't been telling them what to do and bashing them. And
exactly.
They're actually going to come to you, and then you get a chance to teach them about boundaries.
Yep. It's exactly how it is. And that's the thing. If you, like, no matter who comes at you with anything, when they're like, well, this didn't happen, or this happens over here, you can just say, okay. You don't have to defend, women especially, we like to defend our position. We want to justify it. We want to explain it. We want to talk to kids. None of that has to happen. And I will say, as kids get older, as my kids got older in the divorce, I held them responsible. If they mentioned that, at dad's, we get to stay up late or something, I was like, okay, but.
How'd that work for you when you went to school the next day?
What's a healthy bedtime for you? And how do you feel? And that's all. And it's really about them taking responsibility. And we have to do that with kids too. If their baseball stuff is at their, because that's the other place, right? All the issues.
Please.
I can't even tell you. So number one in a high conflict divorce, or any divorce really, but high conflict.
By two sets of everything.
By five sets. Not two. Five. Because you should have a month easily where you don't, I understand I got to get five lunch boxes. Yes, you do. I'm not joking. Get not just two of everything, multiples of everything. Obviously tell the school they need two textbooks and things. I get that. You can't have multiples of that, but everything else, soccer cleats, anything else. I know it's expensive, but nothing is more expensive than your peace. Nothing is more expensive than your calmness. And there's cleats at the house. But again, as the kids get older, I would put little notes in they had it on their gear, what they were supposed to be in their bag. And they were responsible for making, which is, I would do when we were married. Like, you need to make sure these things are in your bag. You need to start taking responsibility for your life in a certain way. And in, obviously age appropriate, I wouldn't make a kindergartner have to know everything, but especially as they get older, it's okay to start, I think the guilt we have of having a divorce, no matter what, with our kids and they're losing out and my poor children and all that stuff, and they have to do all these things. I think that guilt overrides sometimes, and we do too much because we think they're doing too much. We really want to be thoughtful and mindful about what we're asking and how we're asking and what really they can do, what is age appropriate for them developmentally. And these are all really important things. Again, that might be a certain way at your house and not in the other.
Yeah. No, beautiful, beautiful topics.
Yeah.
So we're going to pivot here because
sure.
If knowing my standards, articulating them, and then finding a way to uphold them is the whole kit and caboodle, mm-hmm. boundaries should be really easy, but they're not. And so like 2/3 of your book, I love, because it's like, well, wait a second. That sounds very simple. Let me explain to you why it's not.
Right.
So let's just open up that can of worms and dive in.
I love that. And everyone should hear. So the boundary section of this book, this very thick book, is tiny. How to make boundaries is a piece of cake. I'm going to send you this thing. You're going to figure it out. You're going to do it, right? I got you. It's literally the smallest part of my book. The rest is like troubleshooting and then what you do afterwards. And that's where we get into trouble. It is the pieces of what if they don't take no for an answer? And it's really about us. It's, again, if you always bring it back to yourself, it's usually your people pleasing, your codependency, your self-esteem, self-worth, value, right? And that's all the things I cover in the book and give you tips and action tools about, because I know, and that is why I wrote this book, because every book I ever, it was more about the boundaries themselves and maybe how to do it, but nothing about this sort of trouble, like really what it is in action. I could have called the book Boundaries in Action, because that's really where we stumble. And so it's, once again, if you're having trouble with boundaries, you got to look inward.
Yeah, it's so interesting, because it's the difficulty with boundaries is between your ears, in your heart, and in your life experience. And so it's what you're bringing to the table. And the beauty is boundaries are so vitally important in high conflict marriages and divorce, and to teach your children, because they have to engage with this individual for the rest of their life.
Right.
And for you, they're so hard because, so I came from, dad was an alcoholic, jolly, but an alcoholic. Mom was 3 babies in diapers at 24 years old, rageaholic. And so I came from all of this stuff, and I am a recovering perfectionist, people pleaser, codependent, the whole kit and caboodle. And the thing is, one of my favorite sayings, Abby, is every upset is a setup for personal growth. And when you're in a high conflict situation, there is just a ripe field of upsets for you to work on this stuff. And what comes with that, to your point, not to be too pie in the sky, but I will say my kids went through hell, and they're in their mid-20s. And their emotional intelligence, their ability to set boundaries and articulate themselves, is off the charts. Like, I didn't have that at 40, and they're not yet 30.
Yep.
And so there is that gift in there. And you go through so much of it in your book about all of these different ways where it comes back to you.
Mm-hmm. And that's where it starts. So I always talk a lot about self-awareness, and then I talk a lot about mindfulness. Those are two of the biggest chapters in the book. When I talk about the building blocks for boundaries, those are really the building blocks. And you and I talked about earlier was this difference, because a lot of times we use those words interchangeably, self-awareness and mindfulness, but they are different things. And mindfulness is really the key, the top, you know, it's like all I talk about in my podcast, or I always come back to it, I should say, because I'm self-aware that I'm a control freak. I know I'm a control freak. I'm controlling. I it's my favorite thing. I want to control everyone, what they wear, what they eat, what they think, what they feel. You know, that's why I have a podcast, right? So I can just be a bossy Jewish mother. It's my favorite. So I am very self-aware that I have control issues, shall we say, but I'm not always mindful in a moment. So I do get controlling. So when I get into a fear place, when I'm scared, when I'm anxious, my first reaction is to try to control something around me. Now, when I'm practicing mindfulness, which is means really being in the moment, being in the here and now, I notice like, when my son was in high school, he wanted to drop out. And here I am with a PhD, right? A Jewish family. Like, you don't drop out of school. Like, what? What are you talking about? He hated school, always did, learning disability, blah, 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 but had always done poorly and was trying to drop out of high school. So do you think I got a little controlling at first? Yeah. You know, but what happened, thank God, is, and it saved our relationship and him, I think, but I noted, because I really do practice what I preach, I noticed that my stuff, I was starting to make suggestions. I was starting to, you know, like, what about this? And what if you do this? And this is bad going to happen if you do that. And when I stopped and got mindful, it's like, wow, I'm having a really strong reaction here. This is about me, not him. We call it metacognition, where you can almost see yourself above watching the scene. And one of the biggest tools I use is something I say, don't sack. Don't SAC, don't offer suggestions, give advice, or criticize. And this is a very hard thing to do in general, in life, especially with our kids. So here I am with Max, and I'm not going to offer a suggestion. I'm not going to offer advice, and I'm not going to criticize. So what's left is to ask questions, to listen like I'm wrong. Like, what if I was wrong? What if the best thing for him to do is to quit high school? Right? Which, by the way, I could never get my head quite around, but I was trying to pretend, right? I'm listening like I'm wrong. So if you're listening like you're wrong, you're going to ask what I call our collaborative questions. I'm going to ask questions that, as psychologists, we call open-ended. Things like, tell me more about it, Max. If you were to quit school, what would that look like? Tell me more. And you have to believe it for that moment. You got to lean in. And I know we all get scared when that happens, because we think, if I lean in, oh my gosh, it's going to take off. You know, it's going to be terrible. It's going to be a land. And it's not. The opposite always happens. I guarantee. When it's true, when we're aligned in that and start asking questions, tell me more about this, is my favorite. Tell me more about that. Well, okay. So, and then you could maybe use a little reflection. So I hear you saying that you would drop out and do a trade. Okay. So tell me more about that. What are you interested in? Is there a way we could talk about what you're in? And we really did all these conversations with my son, who, by the way, finished high school and is now going to a four-year, like, amazingly, or finishing up. He then went to community college. He had to find his way, but now he got accepted at a ton of college. It was great. Like, he really turned it around. But I really believe it was because of me asking all these questions. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, but we get afraid. So when we start making suggestions and we start getting controlling, but when we're mindful, we can stop, and you can stop with an ex who's acting crazy, and you can notice yourself going, oh my God, I'm so scared right now. I'm afraid of being out of control in this situation. I'm afraid for my kids. I'm afraid for myself. I feel attacked. Maybe he or she is saying things to you, calling you names, or God knows what else, calling you stupid or worthless, or I don't even know what, right? And these are the experiences you're having. And when you can sit in that, and I talk about almost like being a cloud in front of you, you know, just watching it go by, as opposed to allowing it to change your actions or your thoughts about yourself or anything else, to really, that's what mindfulness is. And you're dealing with some self-awareness there. Wow, I'm aware that I really get reactive. I want to defend myself. I want to justify what I've done. And that's when we lose our boundaries. But if my boundary is, no, you can't take the kids out of the country. I just have this with a couple. No, you can't take the kids out of the country. And in this case, it was a husband who wanted to do this, and he was screaming and yelling at the wife who I was working with, our ex-wife almost. And she just didn't feel safe about it. And she said, nope, like, I'm not going to give permission for that. And that was it. And he, of course, he's coming at her with, you know, you're this, you're that, it's my money anyway, and you're living off my money and blah, 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 right? All the things. And she said, I was feeling really hot. I was getting very upset. She said, but she kept hearing my voice, which I love. That's how controlling I am. I want you to hear my voice. So she kept sort of hearing that voice in her head, telling her, like, this is about him, not you. And that was it. And so she didn't, here's what happens. If you defend the boundary, what happens? When you defend your boundary and say, well, I think you're acting crazy and I don't feel safe with you having the kids out or whatever, he's going to attack your reasons, right? Of course. Or they are going to attack your reasons, and they're going to tell you all the reasons you're wrong. Right. And then, right? So there's no reason.
There's no reason to have the conversation.
Don't have any conversation. Just say, yeah. And no, I'm not comfortable. Or no, no. Don't even say I'm not comfortable. No, no is a complete sentence, as they like to say, right? Yep. No. And then they're going to keep coming at you. Well, what do you mean? What do you, no, no, no. And you say, nope. And then walk away. the discussion's over. I'm done with the conversation. Don't answer the email. You know, again, you have to have the teeth right on the other side.
What you have to have, and I think you just did such a beautiful job of describing it, is without the self-confidence, right? Without that backbone, without that solid foundation, you're going to fold. And then you're going you're going to blame him or her for you folding. And that's that reflection back is, well, wait a second. I always ask my clients that thing that she does that she's been doing for 20 years that scares you, that you're afraid of. What are you afraid of? You've been exposed to it for 20 years. And it's interesting, offline, Abby and I talked about the fact that she taught me something about self-awareness versus mindfulness. I definitely have used them interchangeably. And I just want to reiterate what you said, because it really landed well with me, which is self-awareness is awareness of self that could also be drenched in judgment and criticism of self. Whereas mindfulness, number one, doesn't have the judgment, and number two, is always living in the present moment.
Yep.
Am I getting
that's
that right?
You got. Yep, you got it perfectly.
Yeah.
That's all you got. Right here, right now, it's all we got.
Yeah.
And so how do I, and what's beautiful and why I call the book Your Roadmap to Connection, Joy and Ease, is ease and joy, is because you do walk away from those interactions feeling wholly intact. When you've just said no, and that's that. And then you walk away. It is such a powerful, powerful thing to not justify, explain, give reasons, because you have them internally. And when you start to really feel that, when you start to know, you have that clarity of sense of self with all of your issues and all of your warts and all, it is the way to raise your self-esteem. It is the way to raise your confidence. Every time you do that, and it gets easier and easier, by the way, it's a skill. Boundaries are a skill. Holding them is a skill, and you will get better the more you do it.
The more you do it. And I think that I was doing a boundary challenge last summer, and one of the women so beautifully said, I was raised in a Christian household and good girls don't do that.
Mm.
And so here she was in her 40s or 50s, and she couldn't grab it right away, right? Because it was that unconscious belief. But we dug, we asked some really good, curious questions. And the level of discomfort that she had because this I'm a bad girl was driving her behavior, because she had been trained for decades that you don't do what bad girls do. And so taking care of yourself, right? Setting this boundary and taking care of yourself is a bad girl behavior. Mm. And I say that only to say how it speaks to the fact that 2/3 of your book is really helping us take a look in the mirror. Like what is all of this baggage that I'm bringing to the table that makes the fairly simple skill of figuring out what's safe for me and articulating it and coming up with a plan B if they don't listen. Mm-hmm. Like that's really the boundary. Yep. That big vat, that toxic vat, is your family of origin and your upbringing and your experiences. And I'm speaking this because some of it is going to be unconscious. And so that's not so easy for us to understand and grab at.
I refer to the research of Timothy Wilson a lot, who's a very famous sociologist, written a lot of great books. And he talks about how our conscious brains process information at a rate of 40 bits per second, while our subconscious brains process information at a rate of 11 million bits per second. So
we're screwed.
I know. So people don't hear what you say. They hear what you mean, right? So, and then we've all been there. Someone was talking to us and saying all the right things, but we were like, they're full of crap. I don't know what they're doing. That's the 11 million bits. And so what happens when you're speaking to your ex and or your ex-partner and you are full of fear and doubt and worry, even when you're saying the thing, they know. They feel, I call it the wobble. It's the
wishy-washy. Yep.
It's the place where you're not aligned, right? Where that conscious thought, you're having the conscious thought, I should hold this boundary. This is important. This is good. But subconsciously, you feel like, you're being bad, you're being selfish. They're probably even telling you these things. Okay. If you loved your kids, you wouldn't, that's what this guy was saying to his wife. If you loved these kids, you'd let them come to Europe. How could you be so unloving? You know what I mean? You're ticking all the boxes. So in your head, then that comes out as this wobble. And then trust me, again, people pick up on it. And that's why they are more bullying. That is why they come at you more. Mm-hmm. But you see that as, oh, they're a bully. I have no responsibility in that. I have no place in that. I have nowhere I can help that. Mm-hmm. And I am telling you, you do. Absolutely. 100%. So that's the thing I hear a lot. Well, they bullied me. I'm like, okay, just so you know, part of the problem is this wobble you have. And they're like predators. People pick up on this. Everybody does. We all pick up on the wobble. Someone's walking towards you in the street and they don't even look at you, but you get a weird feeling and you cross, maybe as a woman, you hold your bag a little tighter or you cross the street or something. You just get a funny feeling. We call it a funny feeling. That is the 11 million bits. And so when your partner, when your ex is picking that up all the time, they will keep coming at you. So I'm not saying there's no blame the victim here. I'm not doing that. At all. That is never part of my message. And my message is don't be a victim. It's not about blaming you for this. It's about taking responsibility that wobbles getting in your way. So that first few times when you're coming from that fear, I'm being selfish, I'm a bad person. That's all fear, fear, fear talk. Then they're going to pick up on a wobble and they're going to come at you harder and stronger and longer. So your job, that's why so many chapters in my book are about building those parts of yourself. And in the beginning, it's just going to suck a little and you're because it's again, a practice. You have to practice. You're going to just need to stick to it. You're just going to have to believe me and just stick to the boundary, stick to the boundary, stick to the boundary. But I guarantee you, it will get better. It'll get easier for you. It'll get to a point where you say no. I can't believe the way I say no so easily these days without any even look over my shoulder. Yeah. And I used to be fraught. I would think for hours like, I said no to the extra lotion when I got my legs waxed. Do they feel like I'm cheap or horrible? I used to think this stuff like, oh my gosh, we get all caught up when we just say no to that, let alone something else. But it really starts to shift.
And it feels good. It feels really beautiful to live a boundaried life. And you have boundaries with everybody in your life and you become more and more confident in them. Also, the bad eggs become really clear really quick. And it's like, okay, I can love you from afar, or we can be, you know, acquaintances, but not friends, or whatever the case may be. But it's like, when you get good at that skill, it feels so good. It just feels so good. You feel so confident. So not in control of anyone else, but fully in control of yourself. Yeah.
Empowered.
Yeah.
And I will say this, one of the most special things I think is something I got from Guy Hendricks, who's written many wonderful books. He talks about something called an enlightened no. And what happens, I find, is that when we're saying no, sometimes we say things like, well, that's a hard no. You know, that's a hard no. I'm putting up my boundary. You know, to me, that's not a boundary when you're that's so defensive. Like you don't even trust yourself to keep the no. So you make it so angry and mad and it's a wall. That's a wall, right? That hard no, that like, because boundaries, again, are from love. And I call the enlightened no, I think of it more as an aligned no. It's like, I'm saying no to you taking the kids out of the country because I know that's what's best for my children. I know that's what's best for me. I know that's what's really best for the situation because I do think of my kids first. I am thinking of all these pieces. And so it feels aligned. That subconscious, all that language and my conscious all feel lined up. Yep. And when you get better at that, saying no comes from love, comes from heart, comes from compassion. Your ex is doing these things. He let's say he in the situation feels so out of control. Yes. So that's is trying so hard. You have such a huge part of the real estate of his brain that he is doing everything he can. So if you can find, and remember when you find compassion for that, people think if I feel compassion, then I'm going to collapse my boundaries. No. That's just who you are as a human, that you have compassion for those around you. And no matter what, I always say, this is the father or the mother of my kids. Right. So somewhere I will never regret this union because then I'd regret my kids and I don't. Right. So somehow I have to make peace with that and even love that.
Right.
and even embrace that. Oh my gosh. And there's compassion in that. There's patience in that. There's willingness in that. And that's the key.
Yeah. And I will say, it took me years to go from hurt and anger. I think I went to pity, and then I went to compassion.
Oh, there you go.
And of course, the F word, forgiveness, is just, it's a journey. It's a journey. And so if you're not at compassion, grab this concept of alignment, because we've all driven a car that's out of alignment and you're like,
yeah.
That's what happens when you're out of alignment with boundaries. And when you're in alignment, it's a smooth sailing. So
it just feels so much better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Tell us about the free worksheet and how our listeners can find you. Well, I keep chatting, but we have to go.
I know. We could go on forever. So we'll be in the show notes on your page. There you go. And then everything about me is on Abby Medcalf, my name, which again, I know you'll link to in the show notes page, ABBYMEDCALF.com. And that is where everything is. Relationship tips and tools page, which is a blog that goes with the podcast. I also have a free mindfulness starter kit there you can download. It really is free. A free meditation starter kit. The things that I think you need that are, I make them free. That's fine. And then all of the information, you can do any keywords on my site for any of this. And everything that I have is research-based. That's like my specialty, is that it's research-based along with kind of the woo. I sort of put that all together. I'm a cynical New Yorker at heart. So
I was just going to say, and a little edgy New Yorker.
A little edgy New Yorker thing. So I need to know that this is really firmly based in the research, what I'm saying. And my almost 40 years now of experience, I still work with clients. So it's really on the ground tips and tools and actionable items. So I'm really trying to help people. You can spend money on my books. You can spend money on things. I got mugs. I got all kinds of stuff on the website, but you don't have to. And you could still get everything you need. So.
And if you enjoyed listening to Abby today, tell them where they can find you.
That's the Relationships Made Easy podcast, which is anywhere you download a podcast. On my website, you can find it too. So yeah, if you remotely liked me today, you'll just love the podcast, because I just go on and on.
Well, I have loved this conversation. It's been just delightful to meet you, to talk about this topic that we obviously both love so much. And I hope that you, the listeners, will download the worksheet. This is such a great exercise for you to do, no matter whether you're thinking about leaving, heading into divorce in the messy middle, or co-parenting post-divorce. Boundaries, boundaries, boundaries. It's one of the most important skills in any relationship, especially in high conflict relationships. And so thanks for listening. We'll be back again real soon with another episode of High Conflict Divorce Demystified. Have a great weekend.
Bye.
Transform your relationships by mastering the art of boundaries without controlling or needing their approval. Visit jbddivorcesupport.com/boundarybootcamp to get started today.
Thanks for joining us on the Journey Beyond Divorce podcast. I hope you found guidance and encouragement to help you along your journey. If you like my podcast, please take a minute to subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. You can also visit us at jbddivorcesupport.com, where our team of coaches support both men and women throughout one-on-one coaching, group programs, online courses, and free resources. Stay tuned for our next episode, and I'll talk to you soon.